you remember, last week we introduced the concept of Tumas Meis, the fact that a Kohen is not permitted to come into contact with a Meis. And we began to discuss the idea of what exactly is considered to be a Tumas Meis for the purposes of the Isser of a Kohen. Because we find in other areas of Halacha that there are different levels of what constitutes Tumas Meis. And the area of Halacha we began to focus on was Hilchos Nazirus. The Mishnayos, the Sugyos in the end of Maseches Nazir, not that long ago for some of us, that would bring back hard memories, complicated memories, but the sugyas in the end of Maseches Nazir really speak about two different types of Tumas Meis. There's a Tumas Meis she'anoz megaleach aleha, and there's a Tumas Meis she'enanoz megaleach aleha. Sometimes the Tumas Meis is considered to be of such an extreme level that it forces the Nazir to begin his Nazirus all over again. He has to shave his head and start counting all over again. And sometimes there are levels of Tumas Meis that are not as severe, which, although a Nazir is not supposed to become tummy for, but he's in a Megaleach Aleim, it doesn't undo the entire Nazirus. So clearly in Hilchos Nazirus there are two levels. There is a gradation of Tumas Meis. The question is whether any of that is relevant for us. And there is a statement in Maseches Smachos that relates to two. The Braise Maseches Smachos says that kol Tumas Ein a Nazir Megaleach Aleim Ein a Kohen Muzir Aleim. Any Tuma that a Nazir isn't affected to the point of having to shave and start over his entire Nazirus, so such a tumor is not relevant for a Kohen. A Kohen would not be prohibited from, quote-unquote, being metami himself under those circumstances. So that statement of Maseches Machos is highly controversial on two levels. First of all, it's controversial whether it's accepted l'alocha, because there's no mention, at least explicitly, in the Talmud Bavli of such an equation. And then even if for whatever reason we will accept that statement, then we have to go back and figure out, well, which tumor falls into that category and which not. What exactly are the examples, what are the practical applications of such a principle? So if you deny the principle, then there's nothing to talk about, and you don't have to bother figuring out what falls in the category. But if you accept the principle, then there's what to discuss. So we, at the end of the Shilas, we started to talk a little bit about Golo. I mean, we finished the sugya, we started to talk a little bit about the idea of a Kohen coming into contact, not with the mace proper, but with the aura of the coffin of a mace. Is that considered to be one of the examples of Tumasha Shadazun Galachalau? And perhaps the most common example, the most common application of the Shaila is a question that Tosfos Maseches Nazir raises in the name of Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen. I guess not surprising that he was very up to date on this topic. He was a Talmud Muvuk of Rabbeinu Tam. At the end of his life, he moved to Eretz Yisrael. So he sent a Shaila to Rabbeinu Tam. I don't know whether you know the history of the Baal Tosfos, whether he sent this from Eretz Yisrael or sent it from France. But he sent Rabbeinu Tam the following Shaila. He asked Rabbeinu Tam, he said, I'm a Cohen. So there's a very real challenge that's been posed to me. Not just by not coming into contact with a dead body, but how could I possibly come into contact with any metal kli that has ever come into contact with a dead body? Why is that? Because there's a din in Hilchos Tumas Meis called Cheref Areo Kecholol. Normally when something touches a Dafer Tameh, so the basic cardinal rule of Tumah is that things go down. So something starts up at a high level of Tumah, it touches something, so it drops a notch. That item touches something else, goes down, eventually you reach the point where the Tumah is so low it's not relevant anymore. So a mace is the highest level of tumah. It's called an avi avosa tumah. Let's say if I touch a mace, so I become an avi tumah. If I touch something else, that becomes a rishon tumah. That touches up becomes a shein tumah. Shlishi revi. After reveal the tumah, there's no such thing anymore. And even reveal the tumah is only in the realm of kachim. And shlishi is only in the realm of truma. So the tumah gets further and further away from the source, becomes less and less relevant. But again, the basic principle always goes down. So here the Gemara says that's an exception to the rule. And in the realm of Tumas Meis, so if the kli that's being touched is a kli mateches, at least according to many Rishonim, it's a metal kli. Some Rishonim say it applies to other kelim also, but we'll ask the question in a limited sense. It only applies to metal. The Torah says chalal cherev. The Torah describes in Parashas Chukas someone who was killed with a sword, chalal cherev. So the Tosha Mapeh explains cherev areo kecholol, that the cherev, the sword, or lav dafka the sword, any metal kli that came into contact either touched the mace, it was in the same room as the mace, automatically jumps up to the highest level again and becomes what's called an avi avosa tuma. Normally, if you touch a mace, you become an avi tuma. Here, if this item touches a mace or is the same oil as a mace, it becomes mamash like the mace itself. So Ben Chaim Cohen asked Rabbeinu Tam, if so, then I can't touch any kli that ever touched the mace. If there's any metal kli that touched the mace, so I can't touch that kli, because that's like tantamount to me touching a mace. So shouldn't that be a nisa min haTorah? So Rabbi Chaim Cohen, when he penned the question to Rabbi Tam, so he writes, Eza bayis ashetivnu li. He says, what house are you going to build for me? So in Tosfos it knows that when the question is, it doesn't have the end of the quote. I think others have the end of the quote. It says, Eza bayis ashetivnu li ki ein bayis asher in shal mace. Put together two psukim and one in Navi, one in Chumash, to basically highlight this dilemma that everything. We'll give an example of a metal clay. So this watch is a metal clay. This watch is a chevra yichol, because I once wore this watch to Lulavaya. So now it became tummy tumas meis. Not just tummy tumas meis. It's mamash meis itself. I have a set of keys. So my keys were once at Lulavaya, once at a basic kvaros. So now they become tummy tumas ola meis. So now they become like the meis itself. So when Kohen goes into the room where there's a watch, Kohen walks into the room where there's a set of keys, so then the Kohen is coming into contact with a Chaver Reik Echol. He's going to the same Ol as a Chaver Reik Echol. So Ben Chaim Kohen said to Ben Tan, how can I be? Eza Ba'as Yishetiv Nulim. Where am I supposed to live? He said, it's Mamash impossible. So what's the answer to that problem? Why is it that is not a problem? There has to be some solution to that problem. So Tosfos, when they quote the question, they address this issue of kol tuma she'ena noz megalech aleha. So Tosa suggests that maybe the solution to the problem is based on what we said. Maybe chevra reik echol is a real tuma. There's no question about it. It's a real bona fide tuma, but it's not the type of a tuma that would cause a nazir to be megalech. So let's say a nazir doesn't touch a dead body. The nazir touches a chevra reik echol, so he wouldn't be megalech. He wouldn't cause him to have to shave his head and start the nazirus over again. So if you accept that premise, and then you accept the premise of the Maseches Machos, that any tumor that ain't a nazir megalech ala ain't koy muzal ala, so then you're home free, then you're no pun intended, then you have a place to live. Then the Ben Chaim Kain's question would be answered, that you're allowed to go into a home of a chevra reik echol. You're allowed to touch a chevra reik echol, because that's the type of a tumor, that's the lower level of tumor. It's a tumor that doesn't affect the nazir, and by extension, if it doesn't affect the nazir, then it doesn't affect the kohen either. That would be a good answer to this question. So Rabbi Natam thought that was not a correct answer to the question on two grounds. So first of all, Rabbi Natam said, it happens to be that his facts were wrong. So Rabbi Natam, he doesn't think that a chevra reik echol is a type of a tumor that the nazir is not megalech ala. Rabbi Natam said he thinks that a nazir would be. Again, it's hard to prove that. You can go learn almost like it's nazir. There's no Gemara explicit about this. There's no Shulchan Aruch it's nazir. You can look in the Rambam it's nazir, but Ben Tam's not going to look there. We're not sure how to be machuir the shaylas. Ben Tam says your facts are wrong, that a nazir would have to be megalech. And number two, Ben Tam says, even if your facts are right, you're still wrong. Because I don't think we follow the Maseches Machos. He says that whole kula, the whole leniency, the whole equation of the Maseches Machos, if it's not a tumor affecting a nazir, then it doesn't affect the kohen, it's not correct either. So Ben Tam said, that cheshbon is not correct. So what is the cheshbon? So how do you answer the question? How do you let somebody move into a house? How can the kohen go anywhere? So Ben Tam never answered that question. He never gives you another solution. Ben Tam held you can't go into the house. Ben Tam said a kohen stuck to live in his own daramas. There's got to be some answer, but we're not sure what the answer is. But Rabbi Chaim Cohen's answer is not the correct answer. The answer that the other Rishonim give, Rabbi Tam says, is not correct. So how do we paskin halacha? So we paskin halacha that's mutar. There are more rights in Hilchos Tumas Meis that in Hilchos Avelos, so the din of Tumas Meis are. So the Rambam quotes the Kula that a Kohen is permitted to be mitami for a chevra reik echol. Though the Rambam does make reference to the other opinion, he says that nobody follows that. The minhag is all the Kohanim are a makel b'zman hazeh. So we assume, by default, it sounds like we're assuming like Rabbeinu Chaim Kohen against Rabbeinu Tam. We're assuming, like those we showed, we're quoting this Maseches Machos, and we're assuming that Chevra Kechol is the lower level of Tumah. There's a little bit of a curveball in this Ramah, because the Ramah quotes that the minhag is to be Mekel Legamrei, that we're Mekel Lechatchila. No Kohen that I know today ever walks, imagine, Kohen walks to the house and says, before I come into the house, just make sure all the metal kelim are out. Never, no Shemana Dava Semayelim. So we assume that it's Mutter even Lechatchila. There is a Beis Yosef that says that even in cases where a nazir wouldn't be affected, that doesn't mean that it's mutter for the kohen to become tamei. The Beis Yosef writes that kol tuma she'ein a nazir megalech ala, even if you accept Maseches Machos, ein kohen muzra ala means the kohen's not chayav malchus. Means it's not an absolute sederais. It's still asar. It's potter val asar. When does it say that it's mutter? So the problem is that the Ramah himself says that in other tumas. So the Ramah also says that it's potter val asar. It's still asar. Yet when it comes to this, the Ramah doesn't even make mention of any Issa, even an Issa Dirabanan. The sum of the answer is that if there's some kind of an Issa Dirabanan, they couldn't have instituted it here. It's Mamash Gezerish Ein Rabat Sivichal Lamad Ba. The Chazal tells us several places that even when they would have wanted to make an Issa Dirabanan, it's Mamash impossible. How can you make an Issa Dirabanan on this? That's basically going to make it impossible for Kohen to go anywhere. So Bechay Gavilo goes through. So as long as we knocked it down to a Deraisa, we're not as concerned with the quote unquote the Dirabanan here. So when all the dust settles, that's what the Olam does. No Kohen today asks about going into a house. That's the Minig, and we rely on this Ramah, we rely on Rabbi Chaim Kohen. And by default, we're really relying on this Maseches Machos.
Would there be a different answer if the Kohanim had to do a Voda or something like that?
It would be a different question entirely. Namely, it's not a question: is it aser? You would become tameh. What the Maseches Machos says, you are becoming tameh for going into the house with the chaver gechalol. But we're going to let you do it anyway. Then you're going to have to be mitar yourself like anybody else who wants to become tameh. The Bizman Shmeis Mikdash Hakayim will be obviously much more sensitive to this. Anytime I have a kli that becomes tameh to Bizmeis, I'll be mitar it. I'll just bring it and get Efer Paraduma. It's only Bizman Hazeh that everything is tameh to Bizmeis. So this question in terms of what a kohen is permitted to do and just how far, how much is included in the issue of being metamei oneself, has other shalas that come up both in the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch, applications of lacha lemaisa. One of them is something we spoke about at a Friday Night Learning earlier, I think it was the beginning of this year. We spoke about the issue of a kohen coming to a contact with somebody who's not even quite dead, somebody who's only a goyseis. So the Gemara Maseches Nazir quotes a question: Can a kohen slash nazir, not that he's both, either one, can he come into contact with someone who's not quite dead yet? He's in the state of a geisis. Geisis means that he's ot at the end. Rov goes in the misa. Doesn't mean we have Ruach HaKadosh is going to die, but according to statistics, point the direction that he's probably going to die, and he's going to die very, very soon. Looks like he's ot holding at the end. So that's, at least not Chazal, that's how we used to define a geisis. The Pesachim today have a lot of problems defining practically a geisis, because they have medicine, all kind of kunsim, all kind of stuff. Put a person on equipment, he could stay alive, in theory, for a long, long time. So it's not clear exactly who falls into that halachic category of the goyseis. For us, it doesn't make that much of a difference, except in the chustumah, it makes a difference in other areas, because as a din, in Shulchan Aruch, you're not really supposed to move a goyseis, because a goyseis is literally at the last moments. So the Gemara says that if a person starts patching around with a goseis, so you may be the one to put him over the edge. If you're moving him in such a way, maybe the one who causes the hastening of the death of the goseis. You're not supposed to move a goseis around. So
then it's
together to Ruach Nefesh. I mean, we're not yet sure the person's even a goseis, so we're trying to save the person's life.
I've been there.
Sometimes they move someone when he's got. Sometimes they move someone when he's ready to.
Okay,
so we'll say this second. So the Poskim write that even though Chazal say you're not supposed to move the goyseis, whatever is medically necessary to try to help the goyseis, so that we do permit. So the mice in the hospitals today, we do. To move a goyseis, to maneuver goyseis, to give shots to goyseis, even though the person is in bad shape, again, depending on what the psak is in terms of what should or should not be done, that's really a whole different area of halacha, but assuming that what the type of treatment is being sanctioned by the halacha, is being recommended, being required sometimes by the halacha. So then in terms of a goseis, we're not that worried about. In terms of just general handling a goseis, not for medical reasons, just because you have a feel, you have a need, you want to handle a goseis, so that's something that should be avoided.
Is there a machshava in the halacha that a goseis that's literally going to be nifter and that you don't even try to save him?
That's a complicated challenge. It's an important shiur. Maybe we'll, at some point, since we're talking about end-of-life issues anyway, but we'll get to that at some point.
Right.
But that's not really this. The issue is here you have someone who, for whatever reason, it's in Paskin that there's nothing to do. Well, the mice, medically, there really is nothing to do. So then how should that take Pito's handling the person? But here the shadow comes up in terms of a kohen. Is there any issue with a kohen coming to a room where there's a guy say? So the Gemara quotes Machlekes HaTanaim about this. And it's not clear, two things. It's not clear how we paskin, and it's not clear why there should be a problem. Because a goseis is harek yichai l'chol devar. He is considered to be alive. Goseis is not dead. So why should there be any problem whatsoever? So there are some tanoim and some rishonim who say, attack, there's no problem. There is no problem because there's no tumah, there's nothing to worry about. But the Gemara quotes a Jerusha to support the other view that says, Lahechalok. So even though you don't technically become tamei when you come into contact with a goseis, it's still called Lahechalok. The question is, what does that mean? So some of the poskim said that means midirabana. It means midaftar. How can it be a problem? He's not tamei. So the issue is, the issue is to become tamei. How in the world could there be an issur if the person is not dead yet? So some say it's only a din midirabban, it's a chashash, a gezeira, that if the kohen comes into the room where there's a geiseis, so the geiseis may die any moment, so that should be avoided. And others seem to say, no, it's some kind of a deraisa, that the person becomes not tamei, and it's still a problem. because there's an iser to come into contact with someone who's about to die. Lehechalo is a chiddush that even though he's not dead and he's not tamei, it's still considered to be a problem even on the level of deraisa. So there's a double machlokes. Machlokes whether this din exists altogether, and even if tumsalami this din exists, whether it's a din deraisa or a din derabanan. So how do we pass it on this? So the Rambam writes, both shittas are quoted. The Rambam writes that the more correct thing to do is to try to be machmer. So we try the chetchila to avoid a kohen going to visit somebody when the person is very, 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 very at the end of a life. And again, it's hard to pinpoint what exactly constitutes a goseis for these purposes. There are general questions about kohanim visiting hospitals. That's really a whole different ball game. But there we tend to be makel that if it's the poskim rabbi, it's a very short visit. If you don't know that there's a body there right now, and you're going in for, and it's important, it's a justified visit, and it's for a fairly short amount of time, so then, you know, we generally do let Kohanim visit, but if you know for a fact there's a Geises in the room, the Geises right there, so then probably the more correct thing to do would be to avoid it. Again, it's hard to be marked exactly what a Geises is, but somebody who looks, sounds like it's a Geises issue, so a Kohen should probably try to avoid that, again, either because it's a Cheshash Deraisa, or maybe only a Cheshash Medirabanan, but there are Rishonim who say the whole thing doesn't exist, there are Tanoim who say the whole thing doesn't exist.
If the ghost is one of his dying clothes,
right, then it would be okay, because he's not, unless one wants to have a very, very fancy lumbus that calls man that he's not dead, that there's no chiyav kvura. So the only heter for him to go is al chiyav kvura. It's probably not correct. There is such a lumbus is thrown out. It's like similar. There was some chumra rabbis who said, "I'm a chumra out on the field that a kohen katan is not permitted to become tamei for a relative." If you have a kohen under the age of a mitzvah, so you're not allowed to bring him to the cemetery, you're not allowed to bring him to the funeral even for his own relative. Why? Because he's not mechuyev in the mitzvah of being metamech for his relative, because he's not chayav mitzvah yet. But on the other hand, there's still an issa for you to be metamech him. So it's being metamech him, shalom b'machu mitzvah. So some of them have such a chumma. When we get to that later on, we'll try to show why most, I don't think most poskim accept that. But it's a similar type of idea. Anyway, get back to the story. So this issa, it says in Shacharach and Ramah, that either b'toras vadi or b'toras chumra, that one is not supposed to be coming into contact with the geiseis. So the Pesach Shuvah quotes a shalom, we spent some time on that Friday night. He quotes a fascinating machlek as a charonim about the following shalom. What if you have a person who's a geiseis? And we want to bring a doctor in to see maybe we can heal him. Because although Rov ghosts in the Misa, most ghosts are going to die. But there's a chance, there's an outside chance, maybe we can help him. So the Pesach Tshuva quotes from the Shalos Tshuvos Beis Yaakov, who wrote it, Acharonim, who writes that he thinks that it's a problem. That the Kohen doctor, even though he's being brought in to help the life of the ghost, says can't, because he says such an overwhelming majority of the fact that he's going to die anyway, so he doesn't think that would fall under the category of Pikuach Nefesh. So the Tshuvos Beis Yaakov wants to bring a raya. How do you know that this doesn't constitute Pikuach Nefesh? So he brings a very fascinating raya from the story about Eliyahu HaNavi, the Psukim in Sefer Malachim, describe Eliyahu HaNavi the Tchias HaMeisim, and there's one opinion in Chazal that says Eliyahu HaNavi was a Kohen. So the Gemara has a story in the end of Av Metzia that Eliyahu HaNavi was once in the Beis HaKvaros, and one of the Amoraim saw him in the Beis HaKvaros, and he asked him, what are you doing in the Beis HaKvaros? A whole discussion ensued about what Eliyahu HaNavi is doing in the Beis HaKvaros. So Tosis on the spot, at the end of Av Metzia, asks the Kasha, forget about Eliyahu HaNavi showing up in the Beis HaKvaros in the days of the Gemara, and say from Malachim, he was in the room with a mace. He went into the room and he was Mechai Mesim. So Taisa says, what heter did Eliyahu HaNavi have? Assuming he was a Kohen. Taisa calls it different midrashim, whether Eliyahu HaNavi was a Kohen or not. But according to one opinion that Eliyahu was Pinchas, he was a Kohen. So what right did he have to be Metame himself? So Taisa writes that it was okay, because it was Begedah Pikuach Nefesh. Because since he was trying to bring the baby back, this child back to life, that had the status of Pikuach Nefesh. So Taisa is describing that. Taisa writes, because Eliyahu HaNavi knew for sure that he's going to be Matzliach. He knew he's going to bring the baby back to life. He knew he'd bring the child back to life. So therefore, was Mutter Als Pikuach Nefesh. So the Tshuvos Beis Yaakov asks the question, why did Taisa have to say he knew for sure he's going to bring the kid back to life? Maybe even if he was an off chance, maybe a 1 in 10 chance that he'll be successful. So he says, no, you see, for me, that doesn't constitute Pikuach Nefesh. You have to really be certain that you're going to help, and if you're not certain you're going to be able to help, then the Kohen can't be Metami himself. So the Pesach Tshuva comments on that Beis Yaakov. He says, he doesn't think that's Bechlal true. He says, where do we have here such a thing? In Uchus Pikuach Nefesh, we say, even if it's a 1 in 100 shot, 1 in 1,000 shot, 1 in a crazy chance, so we permit Chil Shabbos for things that are not necessarily. If a person gets hurt, something happens, gets sick on Shabbos, and the doctor says, I'm telling you, there's a 95% chance that nothing at all is going to happen. He can wait till after Shabbos. There's a 5% chance he's got to go to the hospital. nobody would wait a second. You get into the car, whatever you have to do, and get him to the hospital in the best way possible. So we say by Pikuach Nefesh, Enochem, Pikuach Nefesh HaRa, you don't follow statistics when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh. If you have a crazy one in a billion chance, so that doesn't constitute even the latest suffering. Say somebody has a cold, the person sneezes on Shabbos. So he asked the doctor, what should we do? So the doctor says, well, there's a 1 in 10 billion chance that he may be developing some kind of a deadly illness. You gotta get him to the emergency room. So I say to the doctor, come on, tell me the truth. What are the odds? 1 in 10 billion. That's not pikuach nefesh. That's echad min yelav alfi alofim. That's not even considered to be a latest asafik. So the tshuvas, so the Pesach tshuva says, against the tshuvas Beis Yaakov, he says that if a guy's a guy says, we don't know what the facts are, we have no idea, we're not professionals, our best shot is to call the kohen and to call the doctor. If it happens to be that the doctor is a kohen, let the doctor come and assess. If the doctor says, listen, there's no hope whatsoever, there's nothing at all medically I can do for this person, so then we would say, okay, so don't be us. What are you doing here? You're a guy who says he's going to die, what are you doing in the room? But if the doctor calls mom, we haven't brought the doctor in, how do you know? Maybe it is a sofik pikuach nefesh, maybe we don't say kol goes in lemisa, because I'll say rov goes in lemisa, most. Most doesn't mean all, so there's still a latest asofek. So says the Pesach Tshuva, what was the Tosfos talking about above Metzia? When Tosfos says that it had to be Vade Pikuach Nefesh, why did it have to be Vade Pikuach Nefesh? Why couldn't Elio and Avi just go misafek? So the Pesach Tshuva says that it's totally irrelevant to this discussion. There, the person was dead already. So it was a question of doing something supernatural, such as Chias HaMeisim. So imagine the following. Imagine somebody died. The mom is dead already. No shot, no something. They're dead already. And somebody comes in shop and says, listen, you know, I may be able to bring him back to life. He's dead. Medical clinic. He's dead already. Sure. I may be able to bring them. He's been dead already for 3 hours. So it's not a question of, you know, sometimes we're not sure exactly what's called dead. He's been dead already for 3 hours. So somebody comes and says, well, there's an outside chance. Well, I haven't been, you know, honing my Chias HaMeisim skills that well, but it's a chance. I may be able to bring this guy back. But it includes, you know, in order for me to do that, I got to turn the lights on, I got to drive in the car, I got to cook, I got to start doing malachas and Shabbos. But there's a chance I may be successful. So what would you say about such a guy? Would you say, well, that's a sofek pikuach nefesh, so there's a 1 in 100 chance that he may be successful? So I'd say, he's a nut. I said, that's not a 1 in 100 chance. That's a nothing. That's not even a latest sofek. For a person to say, if a person says, listen, there's a 1 in 100 chance that he needs medical attention, that he may die, so that's a realistic, that's a latest sofek. Well, the Torah is given to normal people. The Torah wasn't given to people in Mechai Mesim. So every once in a while, you have someone who has a karech of Tchis HaMesim. Yo, Elisha, you know, not too many people over history have been able to pull off Tchis HaMesim. If a guy to say, I have a suffix, maybe I'm one of those guys, that's not a suffix, that's a nutcase. So that's what Tosfos says, that Eliyahu HaNavi couldn't walk into the shayla and say, maybe I can be Mechai Mesim. Maybe. If you don't, unless you know for sure you can be Mechai Mesim, that's not even a latest suffix. So that's what Tosfos said, when it came to a supernatural cure, Tchis HaMesim, that you have to be a real expert. You have to really, really be sure of what you're doing. But if you're a doctor, so you're going with Yiderech HaTeva, we don't expect the doctor to be 100%. The doctor just has to create a latest suffix for us. So if it's a bona fide, realistic latest suffix, and realistic latest suffix is a very, very low percentage of latest suffix, that's sufficient to be Michal Shabbos, that's sufficient to violate Isurim, that's sufficient to violate Tumas Meis. So that's what we usually assume, halacha, that if you have a guy who's, although the situation looks very, very bad, but there's an outside chance that we may be able to save him, and the only person who could possibly save him is a kohen, nobody today would ever say, sorry, the kohen can't come near him. No, the kohen should do whatever he can do. If the person really dies, so then, okay, then the kohen should try to leave as quick as possible, and the kohen shouldn't be around. If he knows with absolute certainty that he's dead, so then the taka shouldn't hang around anymore, then there's no heter for him to stay around, unless he's mamash meis mitzvah. But if there's no need for the kohen to stay anymore medically, so then taka the kohen has to leave. But kol zman that he hasn't been decided with certainty that he's dead, and the kohen thinks he may be able to help, then I think we usually don't assume like that tshuva spesiyakov. There is a Netziv who has a whole different reading of that. The Tosfos is very fascinating in Netziv. Nitzel points out that the Gemara in the Edom HaSechus Yuma quotes multiple psukim for Pikuach Nefesh. One of the Makaros of Pikuach Nefesh is V'chai Bem, that's the famous Makar, V'chai Bem V'lo Shiyamas Bem. But there's another Makar, V'shambu B'nei Su'asa Shabbos, Chalel Shabbos Achas, Kedei Sheyishmer Shabbos Har Baby, Mechal Shabbos once, so that he should be able to stay alive and observe Shabbos many, many Shabbos later. So the Gemara says in the Edom HaSechus Yuma, what's the difference between those two Makaros, those two sources? The Gemara says it's nafkamina between the two, vis-a-vis sveikos. The Gemara says that if the whole mokor for pikuach nefesh would be v'shamu b'nei su'asa Shabbos, ashkichon v'adai sofik b'nolan. So But then I understand, if you know for a fact you're going to save the guy's life, he's going to make it the next Shabbos, then it's worth your while to be Chal Shabbos now. It's a good investment. But if you don't even know that he's going to make it the next Shabbos, what's the it's not worth it. It's a risky investment, so don't bother doing it now. So the Gemara says that if the whole Mokor Chal Shabbos would have been based on Bishamur Esosa Shabbos, Chalel Shabbos Achas, it would have only been limited to Vade Pikuach Nefesh. If I know for a fact driving him to the hospital is going to save his life, then it's a good investment. If you don't know, then don't bother doing it. But since we paskin that it's based on V'chai Bahem, so V'chai Bahem is a whole different ballgame. V'chai Bahem means you have to do whatever you can to make sure he stays alive. Aye, it's only a chance, doesn't matter. Aye, it's a suffering, it's a one hut, doesn't matter. V'chai Bahem is Dechel Kala Terakula. So it comes in the tziv and says 99.9% of the pikuach nefesh shahs that we have are shahs of a chai behem. The guy was alive for the last 20 years. Now he's very very sick. So we want to keep him alive a chai behem. So then we have a right to rely on even suffer pikuach nefesh. But what if you have a person? He's not alive anymore. He's dead. So you can't say a chai behem anymore. He's dead already. So a chai behem means to prolong life, to keep the person alive as much as you can. So the svar of a chai behem doesn't apply. But says in its if the svar of a shamru still applies, it's still a good investment. Because if we'll keep the person, if we'll bring the person back to life, so then he'll be alive for next Shabbos. So it's a good investment. But the problem is that you're only going down the route of a shamru. You don't have a chaybem. A chaybem is only for people who are already alive. A person's no longer alive, the best you can have is a shamru. So a shamru, the Gemara and Yuma of limits it to vada, not to safek. If you only have a safek, b'guach nefesh, then you have no right to be mechal Shabbos, just on the outside chance he may make it till next Shabbos. That's a razzle-dazzle shot of the Netziv. So we have three different biurim. What in the world does Tosfos said? Tosfos said some cryptic statement in the story of Eliyahu Navi that we only let Eliyahu Navi come into contact with this mace because he knew he could do the trick. So the Tshuvas Beis Yaakov said, you see from here that a doctor can't cure a geises. That was a chiddush. And we're rejecting that for one of two reasons. Either we're rejecting it because it was supernatural, Pikuach Nefesh. Supernatural Pikuach Nefesh is not even the latest of Sufik unless you know for certain. But the other pshat is that it's not a question of supernatural versus natural, it's a question of is he alive or not alive. Kolzman that a person is alive, the Chai Behem kicks in. Kolzman the person is dead, the Chai Behem doesn't apply, but Bishamu still applies, but Bishamu is limited only by Vada and Atasaf. So when all the dust settles, so we assume against the Shuvas Bis Yaakov, most of us are not having Tchis and Mesim Shilas these days, so we're passing regular Dr. Kohanim Magose Shilas, so we assume that if there's any real latest of Suffolk, so then we would permit the Kohen, the doctor, to try to intervene if it's at all possible. If the intervention doesn't work and he's really, really dead, then the Kohen should leave as soon as he's able to.
These things where, is that considered dead? Where, like, the guys at all, so they give him some kind of a.
Yes, the question is that really called dead?
Yeah. Oh, that's not dead.
I don't know. It's hard to believe that that's mamish called the dead. I mean, someone who's still able to come back, l'fidach ha-teva. So it's very hard to know exactly what's considered to be the moment of death when you have these kinds of things, but it's very hard to believe that that's considered to be a tchis ha-mesim. If the pasuk discussed, when you have someone who comes back to tchis ha-mesim, does he have to be mekadesh his wife over again? You know, those kinds of shailas. So we usually don't assume that way. Somebody, some folks can say when he comes back again, Chesed Mason, maybe he's part of a mitzvah, because he wasn't born Jewish, but he doesn't have a chiv mitzvah anymore. So I had a friend of mine who was a little bit of a character. So his father had undergone some kind of something where he was quote unquote dead for a while, and then he was back. He passed away not that long ago, but he was fairly well for many years. So my friend used to always joke with him, you know, Dad, I don't think you can make kiddush for the family for now. I'm not sure you're having kiddush. Maybe your dad, halacha, you know, maybe it wasn't exactly the nicest joke, but it was kind of the family. I don't think they really did that, but that was the family joke. I won't tell you who it was. You can probably figure it out on your own. Okay, good. Anyway, getting back to the story. So we're still trying to figure out what are some examples of people who, examples of situations where a Kohen may or may not come into contact with because it's Tumas Meis, but it's not quite the highest level of Tumas Meis. So there is a din of Tumas Meis that's only a chashash min derabanan called Tumas Eretz Ha'amim. The Mishnayos talk about this, the Gizunazah talk about this, that if a person goes to Chutz La'aretz, so they automatically become Tami Tumas Meis mid derabanan. Why is that? Because you have in Chutz La'aretz, it was hard to keep track as to where people were buried. In Eretz Yisrael, I mean, in the old days, in Eretz Yisrael, they try to keep track as best as they could. But in Chutz La'aretz, it was a total hefkefelt. They had no idea where bodies were going to be. They just had in Washington Square Park, you know, just in the news. So it was just a big story in the news. They discovered a cemetery right smack in the middle of the park from 300 years ago. So it was a whole shed right next to NYU. So you have these all the time. So the Gemara says that there was a fear of any time you go anywhere in Chutz La'aretz, who knows what you're going to bump into. So Midir Rabbanan, they made it a gezeira that anyone who comes and goes to Chutz La'aretz automatically becomes Tamim Midir Rabbanan. And if they want to come back there, it's not become Tar, they have to undergo Eifa Paraduma, as the famous Mishnah Maseches Nazir about Hilni Hamalka, that she took a neder nazirus in Chutz La'aretz, and she was an elder for many, many years, but then when she came to Eretz Yisrael to bring her karbanos, so they told her that she has to start all over again, because Midir Rabbanan, she's considered to be Tamea, Altumas Eretz Amin. So if that's the case, that Eretz Amim is Tamei, so then we have a whole interesting chumr for a kohen. How can a kohen ever come to Chutz La'aretz? How can a kohen remain in Chutz La'aretz? He's becoming Tamei, at least Midir Rabbanan, so that should be a problem. So we usually assume that that's not such a problem. So we're not sending you off quickly, but we'll let you stay till Shacharis. We're assuming that's not such a problem. Why is it not such a problem? So different answers are suggested as to maybe why it's not such a serious problem. So one suggestion is given, it appears in the Shach and the Taz, the classic poskim in Yerodea, that say that maybe this whole Tumas Eretz Amim was only instituted Bizman when there were Taras. At a time when people were Makban into Tara, when Eretz Yisrael was really under, we were able to keep control as to what's Tummy, what's Tar. It really mattered whether things were Tummy or Tar, for Truma, Kachim, Bizman Azeb. So the whole Tumas Tara system breaks down. So then this Dinder Abana is going to be instituted in the middle of nowhere. Some Achronim write that maybe Chazal lifted this whole Dinder Rabbanan, therefore the Kohanim aren't so concerned with Zmanah. That's a suggestion. It doesn't say that explicitly in the Gemara, so that's really a big jump. So Rabbi Kivager on the spot gives another suggestion. The Gemara says that since Tumas Eretz Amim, coming into contact with Chutz La'aretz, is only a Tumah Midir Rabbanan, so then Chazal lifted that Tumah Midir Rabbanan for certain extenuating circumstances. So the Gemara says, what are considered to be extenuating circumstances? So let's say a person has to go learn Torah somewhere. He's in Eretz Yisrael, can't find any yeshiva that he likes in Eretz Yisrael, so he's got to go dafka and Chutz La'aretz to go learn. So the Gemara says, okay, even in the old days, he's a Kohen, so he's allowed to go to Chutz La'aretz. He's becoming Tumah Midir Rabbanan, but for the Tzorach of Limud Torah, you're allowed to violate this Tumah Midir Rabbanan. Well, let's say you want to get married, so you can't find a shidduch in Eretz Yisrael. Let's go to Chutz La'aretz. So for marriage purposes, those are also sufficient grounds. Or let's say he has to make a parnasa. He can't make a parnasa in Eretz Yisrael. So he's got to come to Chutz La'aretz. So that's also okay. So those are the three things that Chazal single out, that you're allowed to do certain things. Again, if it would have been deraisa, not to go for nefesh and stuff, but since it's Tumah Midir Rabbanan, so they lifted this as a Midir Rabbanan. So Rabbi Kivager writes, for most of us today, we fall into one of these categories. He said, again, this is Rabbi Kivager writing in the early 1800s, he said, you can tell all the Kohanim to leave Europe and all go to Eretz Yisrael. He said, there weren't so many yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, there weren't so many girls to marry in Eretz Yisrael, and there was for sure no money in Eretz Yisrael. So he says, you can go to Eretz Yisrael and tell all the Kohanim to leave to Eretz Yisrael. It's not going to work. So he said, therefore, they're allowed to violate this, otherwise, it's a Midir Rabbanan for these Tzorachim. Of course, if that's the reason, based on Rav Kivager, so then you have to evaluate in each and every generation. That's the reason we're all the Kohanim here, because there's no yeshivas in all of Eretz Yisrael. Baruch Hashem, that doesn't seem to be the problem. There's nobody marrying Eretz Yisrael. There's no money there, so okay. Each case has to be evaluated. So if a person finds that they're here for one of those reasons, then it would be justified, and if not, so then it would be questionable. So we're still searching for another kula. So other Rechonim give another kula. Other Rechonim write that the Kohanim are relying on the Ravid. The Ravid, we'll talk about this Ravid in weeks to come. The Ravid is a famous sugya, a famous shita in Tumas Meis. The Ravid's opinion is that if a Kohen already became Tamei, whatever happened, the Meis became Tamei, and now he wants to become Tamei a second time. He became Tamei last month. Last month he went to the Basic Kavaros, the Isra Behetar, and now he wants to go to another Basic Kavaros. So the Ravid says, it's not so terrible, not so bad for him to go to Basic. Once he's already Tamei, he's Tamei already. If he goes to get Eifa Paraduma, then he can't become Tamei after that. The Kozman, he hasn't purified himself with Eifa Paraduma, then there's no Issa for him to come Tamei again. That's what the Ravid writes. Therefore, Kohen Bizman Hazeh, once he became Tommy once, and then there's nothing to worry about. So we don't follow this Ravid. Nobody should be passing like this Ravid. We don't accept this Ravid in the halacha. And even the Ravid himself never said it was Mam Shemutter. He said it, maybe it's not a Deraisa, maybe it's not Malkus. So the Ravid never said it was Mam Shemutter, Mutter. But the Ravid does minimize the Yisr, that maybe it's not at least an Yisr Deraisa. So the Achronim write in Shulchan Aruch that we don't follow this Ravid, the Gabi Deraisas. Nobody today should think they could follow the Ravid, the Gabi really Tuma. But the Gabi Tuma says, Amen, it's only Derabbanan anyway. So Kedar Ravid, the Smarchal of Ishasr Chak. So these are the three standard answers that are given by the Echronim. So we're not quite sure which is the correct one. Each one of them has a little bit of a monkey wrench to it. The first one The Shach Nataz give that the whole issa doesn't apply today because we don't have Tara anyway. It's an interesting svar, but it doesn't say that in the Gemara itself. Then you have the reason of Rabbi Kivega that it's mutter for parnasa and things like that. So that depends on the Metzius. Is that really justified or not? And the third answer, we rely on the Ravid. So the Ravid was really a Das Yachir, and even the Ravid didn't say it was mamash mutter. So each one of the terutzim has a little bit of a complication to it. But Lamaisa, the Minhag HaOlam is a combination of all three of them. So the Minhag HaOlam is Lahachal. So Kohanim have remained in Chutzot. Chabetz Chaim and Lamaisa lived in Chutzot. So you can still stay for Shachos. So the Kohanim, there are Gedolei HaOlam Kohanim who have lived in Chutz Laaretz, and a combination of all these factors, we assume only one of them has to be right. It's not there abundant anyway, so we assume that probably one of them is right.
Let's focus on why, does he mention anything about Narasayim or anything like that?
It's not a tshuva. It's about three words that he has in the Haksoga, the Rambam. So then other Svarim he talks about a little bit more. We'll talk about this Ravid. This Ravid has been quoted, misquoted, applied, misapplied in many, many different ways. So hopefully we'll have a chance to talk about this Ravid a little bit more. But again, at least we spoke about some of the quasi Tumas Meis issues. And hopefully next week we'll come back to some real Tumas Meis. What is considered to be real Tumas Meis when the Kohen's in the same room, in a different room, adjacent room, some of the more of the Tumas OL related issues. Okay.